Pride cometh before a fall. Chapter 117. A few years passed by swiftly. Nebuchadnezzar continued to grow mightier. Nation after nation was conquered by him, thus making his kingdom larger and larger. Judah, with its capital, Jerusalem, has been conquered by him. The kingdoms which lay around Judah also have been conquered, such as Moab, Ammon, Edom, and many others. Yes, even the powerful nation of Egypt has been conquered by Nebuchadnezzar. The powerful king of Babylon glows with pride. No one can defeat him, and his thousands of courageous warriors, no one is able to resist him. Wherever he goes, he is victorious. He returns to Babylon leading his triumphant army. With them, they bring an abundance of gold and silver as spoils of war. Besides, many captives who are brought to live in his land must make his kingdom still mightier than it already is. The subjected nations must always remain his property. To gain that end, he brings the most distinguished people into his own country. They must mingle and live with the Babylonians so that finally every nation will become one nation. When that point is reached, he will have no cause to fear a revolt or rebellion. This is Nebuchadnezzar's great aim. For this reason, he takes all these prisoners with him to his land. That is why the Jews also were carried away into Babylon. And he is the mighty ruler over all these millions of people. When he rides through the gates of his capital, the people cheer their brave monarch with shouts of joy. But he never thinks of the sorrow, the tears, and the grief which dwell in the hearts of the poor prisoners. His honor and his praise are uppermost in his mind. After this, there is a time of peace, and Nebuchadnezzar remains in Babylon. Upon his command, the most beautiful palaces are built, the most splendid temples, towers, walls, yes, many objects too numerous to name rise up. He has his name written on every stone, so that in later years he shall never be forgotten, and that it was he, the great Nebuchadnezzar, who had built all these beautiful buildings. Those letters are not written with ink or paint, but they are chiseled into the stones, so they never can be erased. His people live in luxury and unknown abundance. Everything in the large temple of Bel, the idol of the Babylonians, and in the palace of their king, shines and sparkles with gold, pearls, diamonds, and other precious stones. Really, he, Nebuchadnezzar, has become that head of gold of which he had once dreamed. The pride of the king of Babylon knows no bounds. His people honor him as a god. His enemies fear and tremble before him. But Nebuchadnezzar forgets that it was God who gave him all this might and wealth. God really should have received the honor. But no, only the king receives all the honor. The king does not want to honor God. It doesn't even enter his mind to do so. Not God, but Nebuchadnezzar must be honored, extolled, and praised. When the king is honored, all is well. In this way, the proud heathen king lives peaceably for a time. But again, the hall of the royal palace is filled with Babylon's wise men and magicians. The king had called them together the second time. Probably many of them had gone with fearful hearts as this question arose in their minds, what is going to happen to us this time? You see, Nebuchadnezzar was no mild-tempered king. To him, the life of a person meant nothing. When he became angry, he spared no one. Whom he wanted to kill, he killed, and whom he wanted to honor, he honored. He, and he alone, was Lord and Master. You saw this with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, didn't you? They had to go into the fiery furnace, and when they did not bow before the idol. For this reason, an oppressed feeling prevailed among all those people. It is strikingly quiet. Everyone waits respectfully until the king will make known why he had called them. I have assembled you here, Nebuchadnezzar finally says, for I have dreamed a dream, and I do not know the meaning of this dream. Oh, there you have it again. The magicians, the astrologers, the soothsayers and the sorcerers look at each other. Fear and consternation can be read in their eyes. Must they again tell the king what he had dreamed? Can it be the king has forgotten his dream? Undoubtedly, these questions arose within them. But no, this time Nebuchadnezzar did not forget his dream. He still knows the dream, and tells these wise men exactly what he had seen in his sleep. Now you must tell me the meaning of this dream, the king orders. Great confusion overpowers these wise men. Come now, men, declare the meaning of this dream. The first time you boastfully said, O king, tell your servants the dream, then we will interpret it for you. At that time, the king didn't remember his dream. He had forgotten it. However, now the king knows what he had dreamed. So explain it, you wise men. No, boys and girls. Once again, the wise men cannot declare the meaning of the king's dream. They think and think, but do not know what to say. Neither can they make up anything. Or if only they could contrive something, even if it should be nothing but lies and deceit, you can be sure they would have done so, but they cannot. Then Nebuchadnezzar calls Daniel. Oh, why only now? Why didn't he call Daniel at the beginning? Could it possibly be that he never thought of Daniel before? I do not know. Probably he overlooked Daniel purposely, because if the wise men of his own kingdom could help him, he would not need Daniel. From all this we can see that the callings and warnings of God did not humble Nebuchadnezzar. He remained the same hardened heathen king. Daniel obeys the king's summons. A little later, he stands before his monarch. Nebuchadnezzar calls him by his new name. Just listen. O Belteshazzar, he says, master of the magicians, because I know the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, therefore you must make known to me the interpretation of the dream which I have dreamed. Everyone looks at Daniel and is inquisitive to know whether or not he can interpret the dream. The king continues, I saw in my dream a tree, a large, high tree. It stood in the midst of the earth. It grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen from afar. Yes, it could be seen over the entire earth. The leaves of this tree were very green, and much fruit hung thereon. The beasts of the earth sought shelter from the heat in its shadow, and the birds of heaven built their nests in its branches. I never before saw such a magnificent tree. Then, suddenly, I saw a watcher, a holy one. He came down from heaven. Suddenly, he cries with might, "Hew down the tree, and cut off its branches, shake off its leaves, and scatter its fruit." Now the tree stood bare and dry. Not a leaf was on it. All its beauty had disappeared. The beasts which had lain so peacefully in its shadow went away. The birds flew from its branches. Only the stump with its roots remained standing in the earth. The dew from heaven made this sawed-off trunk wet. Behold, that is what I dreamed last night. I have asked my wise men to interpret it for me, but they cannot. Now I ask you, for you are able, because the spirit of the holy gods is in you. A breathless quietness prevails in the large hall. Everyone is in great suspense, anxious to know what Daniel's answer will be. They wait and wait, but it remains quiet. But why? Doesn't Daniel know the meaning? Inquisitively, they look at him. Daniel cannot speak. Profound emotion has overpowered him. Everyone, even the king, can see that, and they are silent. They will give Daniel time to gain his composure. Slowly, an hour passed in this way. How long this hour must have seemed. Frightening quietness, which is not disturbed by anyone, prevails during this time. The people hardly dare draw their breath. Finally, the king speaks. "Come, Daniel. Do not be afraid. Tell me honestly what the meaning of the dream is." Thereupon the voice of Daniel resounds softly, "O king, your enemies should have dreamed this dream." Then Daniel decides to tell everything and not to conceal a thing. He doesn't do, as we would say, beat around the bush. No, he tells exactly what the interpretation of the dream is. Listen, and you will hear it too. "King, you are that nice, beautiful tree. The God of heaven has given you might, honor, and wealth. Extraordinary. You rule and reign over a good part of the entire earth. But something terrible is going to happen. All this magnificence will depart from you. People will cast you away. You shall live with the beasts of the field and eat grass like an ox. After 7 years, the punishment shall be lifted. The tree wasn't completely chopped down, was it? Didn't the stump and the roots remain in the earth? That means you again will recover. First, you will have to acknowledge that not you, but God reigns. The Most High must receive all the honor." Daniel was astonished at this dreadful meaning and had remained silent for 1 hour. Compassion fills his heart. "O king," he cries, "forsake your sinful, wicked life. Probably the Lord will spare you if you break with sin." Daniel is silent. He didn't have an easy task. It isn't easy to bring a dreadful message like this one to anyone, especially a king. You can be sure these words made a deep impression upon Nebuchadnezzar. He didn't doubt for one moment but that Daniel had spoken the truth. Perhaps it didn't leave his thoughts for some time. 1, 2, 3 months passed. Nothing of what Daniel had said happened. Slowly the impression leaves Nebuchadnezzar. The fear for what would happen diminishes. Finally, it disappears. It takes so long. Probably it won't be so bad after all. Perhaps it won't happen at all. At first, Nebuchadnezzar hopes so. Later, he reckons upon it. And he again becomes the same cruel, high-minded, proud king as before. The glittering palace of the king extends high above the thousands of houses in Babylon. All the houses in the Orient had flat roofs, and Nebuchadnezzar's palace did too. One day the king walks calmly back and forth upon the roof. It is nice and cool up there. From this high roof, he can see the entire capital. He stands still and looks. Isn't the city beautiful? Such gigantic, richly ornamented temples. Such wealth. Such luxury. He sees the hanging gardens with their waving palms and fragrant flowers. And all that is his own work. He alone has made the city so beautiful. Oh, how magnificent! His heart swells with pride. He no longer thinks of what he had dreamed. It is exactly 12 months since he had this dream. Neither does he think any more about the sensible advice of Daniel. Finally, he cries out, "Is not this the great Babylon that I have built?" A triumphant smile comes upon his face. His eyes sparkle. But suddenly he turns pale as a voice resounds from the high heavens. "Hearken, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom is departed from you. The people shall drive you from them. You shall live upon the fields with the beasts. You shall eat grass as an ox, and 7 times shall pass over you." Nebuchadnezzar had not hearkened to the warnings of the Lord. He had cast the advice of Daniel to the wind. Now the punishment has come. God in the heavens caused him to feel that there is another king, one who is more powerful than he, for Nebuchadnezzar becomes insane. See him creeping over the ground like an animal. He picks blades of grass and eats them. Night and day he creeps around like a fool. In the morning he is wet with dew. His hair is not cut. It hangs from his head in long, tangled locks. The nails of his fingers grow so long that his hands begin to look like the claws of a bird. This terrible insanity lasted 7 years. Then his senses return, and the first thing Nebuchadnezzar does is he raises his eyes to heaven. He extolled, praised, and honored him that liveth forever, the God of heaven and earth. Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges that God does what he wills with the inhabitants of the earth. God abases the proud and exalts the humble. It makes no difference whether he is a king or a beggar. The Lord is the Almighty One, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. Nebuchadnezzar stands up. The princes of Babylon realize their king has recovered. They come to him again. He is washed. His hair and nails are cut. He receives new royal clothing, and soon thereafter he sits upon the throne of his kingdom. His many servants honor and serve him. Yes, he receives more glory, might, and honor than formerly, but he has felt the strong hand of the Lord. Publicly, he makes known to his subjects what has happened. He doesn't shame himself, therefore. He openly gives God the honor. We do not know how long he reigned after his insanity. At last, he died at an old age. Then he had to appear before the judgment seat of God to give an account of all he had done. That surely was terrible for him, for his heart had been abased, but not renewed. He died as a heathen. This history contains a serious lesson for us too. So often we too are proud and high-minded. Who among us give God the honor for all the blessings which we receive daily? Shall the heathen king Nebuchadnezzar put us to shame? May the Lord keep you from pride, which is a great sin. The sin of pride shall be punished by the Lord. He humbles the proud, as we can see in the story of Nebuchadnezzar. You can depend upon it and believe it, for this truth is sure. Pride cometh before a fall.